With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at eplroundtable@gmail.com. All right, now we are here talking all things Tottenham, which obviously is pleasing to me, with Steve McGookin. You can find it on Twitter at Steve McGookin, and is the former president of New York Spurs, which is a New York supporters group for, obviously, Tottenham. Steve, this was a profoundly good season for Tottenham. Obviously fell quote-unquote short of the title race, but continues Tottenham's improvement in their finish in the league table. Highest finish for Tottenham, most points for Tottenham in the Premier League era. What was your view on the whole of what was, come the end, a fairly successful season for Tottenham?
Yes, thanks for having me back on, Kevin. It's good to talk to you. Very, very, very happy with how we played this season. Very proud of the team, the way we were organized. Very proud of the players and the coaching staff. Can't say enough about how proud I am to identify with this team this year. As you said, obviously, we finished the highest scoring team in the league, as well as having the best defense and the lowest number of losses in the division. Another remarkable thing was Harry Kane's amazing season, despite being out for 3 months of it. And Hugo was also, you know, very unlucky not to win the Golden Glove this year. Yeah. And of course, finishing above Arsenal, that was a huge bonus. But as I say, most of all, I think it was the way we played. We played some really sublime football along the way, and it was a genuine joy to watch this team take the field this year. In terms of, you know, year-on-year improvements, you really couldn't ask for anything more, but no silverware. And a team this good deserves to win things. And that's where I think we need to focus, certainly not in the immediate short term, but over the medium term. We need to start winning things. And as you say, you know, our best league finish since 1964, we did make a race of it, but quite frankly, it was always going to be Chelsea's to lose coming into that final stretch. I think in terms of, you know, my favorite game, my highlight, season highlight in terms of an individual game, was the 2-0 win against Chelsea at the Lane and Dele Alli's action replay goals. It was, you know, one of the games where we, you know, as you know, we just bossed it from the get-go, and I don't think there was another team that could have lived with us that night. But actually, you know, I'd also point to the game at Crystal Palace immediately after the heartbreak of the cup semi-final, because that was a game where we needed to bounce back strongly, and we showed just a tremendous character in what was a very difficult game against at that stage a resurgent Palace team that hadn't yet obviously, you know, secured their own safety, and that game took an awful lot of emotional effort, and I think psychologically it showed what we'd learned from the collapse at the tail end of last season. We'd come off our most disappointing outcome, our most disappointing result of the season, and we were able to claw our way back into it. And I think also the same thing emotionally and psychologically was attached to the final game at the Lane. Just a huge emotional occasion. We absolutely needed it to go right. And again, especially we were coming off that loss at West Ham. But we were able to step it up, and we were just outstanding. We played some great football in order to, you know, beat United that day, and it was just a wonderful day all round. Season low light, I think. I think generally
the whole of the Champions League.
I was going to say our general disappointing performances in Europe. We undersold ourselves. and we got really we got what we deserved. I think our performances didn't really warrant anything more than we got out of that. But definitely as a single game, again, the low light for me of the season was the cup semifinal, because, you know, when Delhi scored that incredible equalizer, I really did think, and I think I remember saying to you at the time, I did think, this is it, we can go on and win this now.
Yeah.
But Conte, I mean, you know, Conte being able to bring Hazard off the bench.
And Costa. Was,
well, less so Costa, to be honest. I mean, you know, Hazard's a match winner, and you know, for him to be able to bring a player like that off the bench, it sort of shows the depth of resources that they have that allows them to bring on players like that, and that emphasized the difference between the two teams. I mean, if you look 1-11, our first choice team is, I would argue, the best in the league, but we just don't have the depth to be able to bring a match winner off the bench that can turn a game. And I think, you know, as you and I have talked about in the past, that's going to be one of the main challenges that we're going to face next season. So I mean, obviously, if you're a manager, you start from the premise that every position on your team can be upgraded. But given the starting 11 that we have and how we want to keep the core of the team together, plus with, you know, what's happening with the stadium, and we won't have the kind of resources that we might like, it raises the question of, you know, what sort of players do we target if we're looking to bring somebody in? First of all, who are they going to displace? You know, who in our first choice 11 is a new player going to displace? So that means you're either looking for younger players with a big upside, but as we know, you know, Dele Alli doesn't come along every day, or you're looking at players who are going to bolster the squad, but they might have to be content to sit on the bench for 3 out of 4 games. And that's not an easy balancing act, as you know.
Yeah, it's very hard. And Pochettino has been quoted saying as much, that it's very hard to add to the squad, not only because it's hard to replace any of the players in our current 11, but also because of the atmosphere at the club that has so much kind of familial love about it. Guessing how somebody will fit into that, you know, having to go beyond the scouting, which now I think is one of the reasons the Premier League has become even more competitive, is now everybody has similar access to digital scouting, but it's that next step of how will this person fit in the building, not just on the pitch, that makes it all the more difficult. And as you say, do you go out and buy a starter, which can mess with that harmony because you're putting one of your better players on the bench, or do you go and try to buy somebody for the bench, which is kind of what we tried to do with Janssen. And then, to be fair, he shouldn't have had to get a shot this year, right? But and we spoke before the season even that Kane was going to get hurt this year. The fact that he had played 2 years without missing a match, not that he's was all of a sudden injury prone, but just nobody can play a contact sport that long without getting injured. And so we did bolster depth. It just didn't pan out. We brought in Sissoko in case we lost one of our wingers. Then we lost Lamella, and then Sissoko wasn't able to do the business, right? So I felt like we did do well last summer. It's just they didn't come good for us. And I've mentioned before that I honestly think that if we had Lamella come on in all those matches where Sissoko came on, we could have won the title.
Yeah,
I think that's how close that margin was.
Again, it goes back to that thing about, you know, do you have a match winner who you can bring off the bench? And Lamella is about the closest that we have to someone like that.
Yeah, or it would have been Son. Lamella would have been starting and Son come off. Right. But either way,
And it's interesting that you mentioned Janssen as well, because that's a dilemma for Poch. If he goes out and buys another striker or, you know, someone who can play up top, then that's not a vote of confidence in Janssen, which I think he needs. He needs to be the second striker. He needs to be the alternative to Kane, and I think he'll come good. I've said to you all along, I think I love what he brings off the ball, even when he's not involved in the play directly. I love how he uses space. I love how he creates space for his teammates. So I'd like to see Janssen, you know, get a few more games next season. Also, Onuma, you know, who knows how that's going to pan out, but got to figure he's going to get one more season at least, and then see, you see where we go on him. In Kudu, in the same boat, you've got the hyphen twins, Walker Peters and Carter Vickers. You know, we're going to see more of them, and we're going to see more youngsters like Lesniak coming through as well. So in a way, we we have a we have a decent squad, but as we were saying, it's not rich enough, it's not deep enough to be able to just lock games down by bringing on someone who can turn the game, unfortunately.
Yeah, if you were in charge of acquisitions and stuff like that, which positions would you strengthen in this offseason if you could?
Here's how I would strengthen every single position, to be honest with you, Kevin. Double everybody's wages. I wouldn't buy a single player. I would just double everybody's wages, because I think the big thing that this club now has to address is the wage structure. And if we want to keep the nucleus of this side together, inevitably we're going to have to look at what they can potentially earn elsewhere. Obviously, Kyle Walker's future is going to be up in the air. You know, everybody seems interested in him. Do we sell him abroad, or do we sell him to one of the bottomless pocket clubs here? And obviously, you know, as we've talked about in the past, there's a limited universe of clubs across Europe who can afford to pay silly money for our players. But we're in that situation where we have 4-5 players who teams would pay silly money for. And so we have to now, you know, come to terms with how do we prioritize keeping the nucleus of this side together? And I would be more than happy if we didn't sign anybody and just basically doubled everybody's wages.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'd say because of what we were talking about with Jansen / Lamella / Son, I think we need a forward or a winger. Because Sun can't do both, right? Because that was the issue. That's why Sissoko played in so many matches, is because once Jansen started to struggle, we played Sun up top, and then we didn't have more wingers. Onuma's an interesting shout. He obviously took a step back this year. I think we would have seen him in more matches if he had impressed in the ones that he got. But then again, that's one of those, well, did he just need a run of matches and never got them? Maybe. Obviously, Winks was the big developer this year. Unfortunately got hurt towards the end of the season, but that's got to give us confidence as Dembele is starting to get up there in age. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what we do. And if we decide to stick with a back three, will we try to get another center back in? Or do or like you said, are we going to give players another year? Are we going to say to Wimmer, you had one good year, one bad year, let's do one more and see what the trend is?
Best of three. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
No, that was absolutely right. I mean, the Lamella thing changes the equation completely. If we had a sense that he was going to come back, you know, fully fit and the sort of player that he was when he first broke through with us, and he had become the player who was showing the potential that we all knew he had. So if we were sure that we would get another season like that out of him, then to an extent, our problems are solved, I think, on the attacking front. Yeah, I think the thing with Kyle Walker is, and I think everybody pretty much feels the same way, I've been a huge Trippier fan for a long time, and you got to figure that at some point one of them would leave, either Trippier to just to play every week, or Walker would look for, you know, some more lucrative pastures.
Especially before the World Cup, because both of them are probably eyeing a spot.
Exactly. I mean, I think, as you and I have talked about in the past, it's a completely different kettle of fish on the other side of the pitch, where I think there is a clear difference between Danny Rose and Ben. But in terms of, I mean, Trippier has a significant upside to him, which hopefully I think we'll see over the next couple of seasons. So it is going to be interesting what eventually happens with Kyle. I mean, where do you think he would end up in terms of not just signing for a team that can sign him, you know, because they're wealthy, but a team where he could make a real contribution? Do you think City would be the most likely option for him.
Yeah, we did a City segment yesterday, and unfortunately, all the parts make sense. They need English players. They need a right back. They need some pace out of the back. And they'd pay the most money for him because they... City go into every summer needing English players. Just to try to get anywhere. Do you remember 2 years ago, they literally only had 23 senior players? Because to get to 25, the two would have had to be English. And they didn't have them. And they have the insane money that you talk about. The question is, would we sell in league still? So whether or not we would do that, I don't know. I think the Bayern Munich thing is interesting. It's always hard to say Barcelona without sounding like you way overrate a player. But they've been playing a central midfielder, Sergio Roberto, as their right back for the majority of the year. And in a squad like Barcelona's, they can carry a couple players. And I don't mean to disparage Walker. And this is probably insane to hear for neutrals to hear, but Kyle Walker, before he started being rotated with Tripp, was probably the best right back in England. This isn't the always error-prone Walker from 2 years ago, but I think those are the kinds of clubs that are looking, and I do think that's incredible. But yeah, unfortunately, I think City makes the most sense because I think we could pry more money out of them because they need homegrown players than we could out of foreign clubs. But I think that's the level of club that we're talking about.
Yeah. As I say, there is this limited universe of clubs that have the money, have the resources to pay silly money for players, and we have a number of players for whom clubs would pay silly money. So for us,
and they're all young, so people can still view them as, you know, future potential.
And they all have tremendous upsides, and I think that's why for me the priority is nailing these people down, nailing these guys down. Poch as well, Poch and the coaching staff. We have to make a priority of having a good, solid medium term deal with him. Plus, we also have to, you know, put up a wall around the nucleus of the team that we want to keep.
Yeah, Toby still obviously the outstanding member of that. Need to make sure that we get him tied down because that release clause that everybody was freaking out about does start not this summer, next summer. So obviously we want to get that done by then. I honestly understand his hesitancy because as you and I talked about earlier in the season, which actually I want to talk on this a little bit. As this is a season review, people said that once we beat Chelsea, we should have won the title. Here's the thing. When we beat Chelsea, that was to ensure top four because we struggled October and November. We were not in second when we beat Chelsea. That was a big result because it was a tough season. Liverpool had played an incredibly good first half of the season. Arsenal obviously were there or thereabouts. So the people that were like, well, once you beat Chelsea, you became favorites, are not remembering the order in which things happened.
No, I that's a very good point, actually, Kevin. I think that once we beat Chelsea, it effectively became a two-horse race. But you're right. No, I don't think... I don't think it was ever really anything other than Chelsea's to lose because we were requiring them to lose too many games in order for us to catch them.
Yeah. The one match that was disappointing was obviously the West Ham match, but that also got blown out of proportion. But if we had beaten West Ham, we would have closed the gap to 1 point before they played, which I think could have had
That's
an impact.
Right.
But with the amount of games that they won towards the end of the season, that result didn't actually matter. The only what if is would it have affected the mentality? But with that many experienced players that have already lifted trophies, you know, that was always the dream for us, was close it to 1 point, maybe they get anxious. But in the end, it didn't matter anyway. I don't know why it turned out weird aside, but there we go.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Do you think we just roll into next year just kind of assuming that if we all continue to develop, we'll be there, thereabouts? Or do you think he's going to need to adapt again? Because in between last season and this season, something that he worked on over the summer and came back with was different formations. Because it sounds crazy to say, but before week one of this season, we had only played 4-2-3-1 under Pochettino. It was the only formation he was comfortable in. Obviously this year, then we played like 4 or 5, which was incredible. Do you think we'll see any continued development from him alongside the players?
Yes, I definitely do. I think he has to continue to be flexible, and especially if we don't bring anybody else in, we have to make the best use of the players that we have. And so I think more flexibility is probably in order rather than staying to a rigid one rigid system. You mentioned the preseason. I would love us to play a couple of preseason games at Wembley. I'm sure we will, but again, that's one of those things that is out of our hands. I mean, it's not like we can just arrange a game at White Hart Lane to suit us, because Simply Red might be playing at Wembley or something like that. We won't have an opportunity to, have full access to the stadium. But I would love us to play a couple of preseason games at Wembley. And I think Wembley is going to be one of those words, Kevin, where you hear it in lots of different circumstances in the run up to the season. I think all of us are cautious, I think, going into this season at Wembley, to be honest. And we know it has to be done, and it's one of those situations where we just have to take the medicine and make the best of it. But it's still something of an unknown factor on how the team is going to react to it. And also, it doesn't help, to be fair, it doesn't help having built the lane into the sort of fortress it was this season, and then literally the following day watching it being torn down. That hasn't helped. But, I think if we can get the logistics right and play the right size of pitch, for example, and we can instill a motivation to succeed. Poch can basically remind these guys that they're the same team that played at the Lane, and I think that's the important thing. And an awful lot, obviously, is going to depend on us getting off to a good start there. And I think once the fixtures are announced on June the 14th, we're going to be focused on that first home game, whoever it's against. It's going to be as crucial a game psychologically as the final game at the Lane was. It might not be as emotional a game, but it's going to be one of those games where we need to win it, and we need to, show that we're at home. And that's going to be difficult because, visiting teams, as I say, everybody's going to be looking at the fixtures in a couple of weekends, and the visiting teams, especially, smaller and promoted teams, are going to look at Wembley as being like their big weekend out. And of course, they'll know that we might be unsettled and vulnerable playing there. So, there's a lot of unknowns about how we approach Wembley. And I think, Kevin, I honestly do think that fans understand these unique circumstances of this upcoming season. And I'd be interested to hear what you think about this. But we people might conclude that it's unlikely that we can improve again in the sort of exponential way that we have the last couple of seasons. So people might be okay with the idea of treading water this season, but that still has the basic expectation of a Champions League place to take into the new stadium. Mm-hmm. So we always round these things up. Season previews are always, well, what would you settle for with the. But realistically, a competitive shot at another cup has to be a big priority for us, as well as a better showing in the Champions League. But I think going into what we're about to go into at Wembley, it's as much psychological as it is about how we express ourselves on the pitch. And if we can take that fortress mentality that we built up at the Lane this season and at least try and apply it, or try and, transpose it to what's happening at Wembley, then I think that's going to be really, really important. It has to be a huge priority for us.
Yeah, mentioning the Wembley thing, A lot of people recently realized, I don't know if there was an article that just reminded everyone about the pitch size difference, and we've talked about it on on the main show here several times now, is that, first of all, at the training facility, we had a Wembley-sized pitch since last summer. So we did practice on a pitch that was similarly sized, but inherently a pressing system is harder to do when there's more space because the lanes are wider. You have to run more to get there. So that is the analytical, quote-unquote, reason as to why maybe we struggle on bigger pitches, Wembley included. As you say, it could be a mentality thing. Do you think it'll be difficult for Tottenham next year, or do you think that's kind of an overstated issue?
I honestly think it's one of those things we won't know until the season starts. If we can get off to a decent start, and again, so much of this is psychological. If we get a decent first couple of games at home and become more familiar and satisfied, this is the team and the fans, satisfied with the idea that this is our home now for a year, like it or not, I think that the sense that'll permeate from the stands down onto the field, and the players will react to that. I think the more at home people feel, and I think this is going to be a big priority for the club, is how do you make people feel at home at a place that clearly is not your home? But it's one of those things I think we won't know until the season starts and we get a couple of games there.
Yeah, makes sense for me. What do you think the objectives will be for next season? You mentioned as fans, especially a cup run. And as you mentioned at the top of the show, I think that there was a season 2 or 3 years ago, and we mentioned this in the Manchester City segment that we did, where their goal was to get out of the group stage in the Champions League. They kept being in it. They hadn't established themselves in Europe, and they had to. It feels like, for me, and we've talked about this off air, that next year is that. Like, I honestly feel like we could finish eighth next year and get a trophy, and it would still be a success, because we need tangible proof of how good this team is, because otherwise it'll just be people like the people that come on this show and some of the listeners at home that'll even remember how good this Tottenham team was once the history books come, right? Is that how you view it, that we just have to win some silverware?
I think it comes down to that, because otherwise you look at the exponential improvement that we've had over the last couple of seasons and you think, well, okay, we can't sustain that, especially given the circumstances of the stadium move and that sort of thing. So how do you demonstrate? How do you actually say, here's what we've learned from last season or from the previous season? And clearly, as I said, the psychological change in the team at the tail end of this season was just an incredible improvement on how we fell apart at the end of last season. So we have to be able to point to something next year to say, here's what we've learned, here's how we've moved forward. And maybe that is, here's how we've learned not to lose in a cup semifinal. Maybe it's as basic as that.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. And should probably be touched upon. Yeah, the narrative that Pochettino's teams don't win at the end of the season, and could they ever, like, is it the training sessions, what's wrong with him? Not only did Pochettino install more formations for us to play in this year, but also we picked up 36 of the last 39 points in the Premier League after the narrative had followed him from Espanyol all the way to Southampton, all the way to us. And as he continues to grow, it does seem like more and more of those things will be eliminated. Out of curiosity, where do you think Poch falls in the hierarchy of league managers? Because last season, I remember there was an advertisement for people that pronounce words such ways. And it was all about the, wow, I just threw my pen at my computer. Don't gesticulate too wildly, kids. But yeah, there was this advertisement all about the managers in the Premier League, because Pep Guardiola came, Jose Mourinho came, Antonio Conte came, and so it was just like, look at all these huge managers that are now in the Premier League, and they did not include Mauricio Pochettino, who now for two straight years has been over average, literally the best manager in the Premier League. Do you start to view him there, or is he, like most of our players, still viewed as a prospect, where he'll be there one day, but he isn't there yet, despite the fact that he has a very good track record thus far?
Surely, absolutely. And I think I would not be alone in saying I'm pretty happy for us to fly under the radar in that way. I mean, it did get to the stage where there was a section of the season where really people were just talking about Chelsea, Man City, Liverpool, Man United, even to an extent, and we were flying under the radar. And I think, you know, that took a lot of pressure off us. So I was happy enough for that. I don't think we're at a point where Poch is not being recognized among football people. I think everyone knows how good he is, and they know how lucky we are to have him. And I think that's why we need to make a priority of nailing him down to a medium to long-term contract if we can. I think a more interesting question, though, Kev, is how does he see himself? Where does he see him in the hierarchy of Premier League managers, even with somebody like Mourinho, who you know, has made a distinct priority of winning the Europa League, which the game is tonight, obviously, has been overshadowed by the terrible things that have happened in Manchester the last couple of days. But his idea that to have silverware at the end of the season plus a passage into the Champions League is a successful season for them. And Poch, I think, is at that point where he has to win something in order to prove that he can win, first of all. But also, in terms of his influence on the team and player development and man management and that sort of thing, I don't think there's a better manager in the division at all. And I wouldn't trade him for anyone. I wouldn't trade him for any other manager in our division. Mm.
And I love how understated he is, like in the media and everything. Every week you see all these quotes from all these other managers, whether it be controversy, like when Pep kind of got misquoted and everybody said that he was claiming City wasn't a big club, to Mourinho's constant complaining. Even Conte is kind of crazy sometimes. The fact that Pochettino keeps things so low and understated, I think, is a very appreciated thing, both from the players, that we aren't constantly in the news, and also, obviously, as a representative of the club that we support.
Absolutely. And in terms of the passion, the way in which he displays the passion for the club and for the way we play, that's the amazing thing as well. Yeah. Conte's passion when they win, when they score, and the fact that he runs up and down the side of the pitch, that was something Mourinho used to do. He doesn't seem to do that often these days. But you can tell just by looking at Poch. And you remember when you and I went to the Bournemouth match, for example, and we looked down, and I said to you, just watch Poch for 2 minutes. You know, don't watch the ball, just watch Poch and the way in which he talks to the players. He comes out to the edge of the technical area, and he'll talk to the players through an attacking and a defending movement. And his involvement, the fact that he wants to kick every ball, shows his passion that way. He doesn't run down the touchline, and he doesn't fall to his knees. And I love him even more for the fact that he doesn't do that. But the fact that he comes to the crowd at the end of the game, and he understands the importance of that relationship, the relationship between the fans and the players, is very, very special. Very special. Oh, and he's magic, you know.
Who? Mauricio Pochettino? Final thing. Where do you think we finish next season? It is a way too early prediction. Two of my favorite quotes in this offseason already have been, I guess they were in the season. Now we're in the offseason. Was Harry Kane said last year they finished third. This year they finished second. He was like, so, like, ... And then Mauricio Pochettino in an interview was told, since he was in the Premier League, he's finished 8th, 5th, 3rd, and 2nd. And his response was, just one more to go. So I obviously love that. Is that, dare we dream? Do you think next year is the year that we're genuinely challenging for the title instead of top four and then just kind of lucking into higher than top four?
No, I think we're going to win the title the first year we're in the new stadium. I think next year is going to be hard. I think we're going to be treading water. I think that includes qualifying for the Champions League. I don't want to say whether that's in second or fourth. What do any of us know? But I do think that if Poch sticks around, if we protect the nucleus of the team, we bring in one or two players next season, maybe at the end of next season, and we pay the players that we have commensurate with the demand that there is for them, then there's no reason why we can't win the league the first season in the new stadium. You can hold me to that, Kev.
I'm sure I will. All right. Well, this has obviously been a huge pleasure. Always is speaking with you. In the interim, where can folks find you before next season?
Oh, just on Twitter, at Steve McGookin, or if you want to talk to other Spurs fans in the US, go to at New York Spurs or nyspurs.com. And hopefully it won't be too long before we're sitting down for a game together, Kev.
Yeah, that would be great. Thanks again for coming on throughout the season, and especially for today, and I'm sure we'll speak soon.
Thanks. All the best.